The Army's pretrial hearing of Bradley Manning wrapped up yesterday. As you know, Private Manning is alleged to have released hundreds of thousands of classified U.S. documents to WikiLeaks. And we're joined now by Liza Goitein, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center. I'm very pleased to welcome her to today's first Backstory segment. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, Mr. Manning was at an Article 32 hearing. Is that roughly similar to a grand jury hearing in the civilian system?
It's something like that. The purpose of the hearing is to test the strength of the government's evidence and to see whether there's enough evidence to move forward to a trial. So there's an investigating officer who listens to the evidence and then makes a recommendation as to whether or not the case should go to a court-martial.
Does he have similar rights to what he would have in the civilian system?
More or less. It's roughly similar. There are some differences. I have to confess that I'm not an expert in military justice, but roughly the outlines of it are the same.
From what you hear, is it assumed that the case will move forward to a court-martial?
Yes. I mean, the government certainly had enough evidence for the case to go forward to a court-martial. I think the only question is whether each of the 22 counts that have been brought against him will go forward, or whether there will be a recommendation to go forward on different charges.
Well, I use the word alleged because I've been trained to do that. But do we have to allege that he gave all of that those documents to WikiLeaks? Isn't that pretty much established?
Sure we do. I mean, that is certainly the same as the civilian system, that the defendant is innocent until proven guilty. And he has not been proven guilty. But the showing that the government made at the Article 32 hearing was certainly convincing enough to assume that he will go to trial.
Well, he's pleaded not guilty to charges that include aiding the enemy, transmitting national defense information in violation of the Espionage Act, and more than 20 other criminal charges.
Right.
That sounds to me like he might spend an awful lot of time in the brig.
He could. The prosecution is seeking a life sentence for him. The prosecution is not recommending the death penalty, which is available for the aiding the enemy charge. So these are some pretty hefty charges, and I think that that's one of the issues that's really arisen in this case and several other cases in which this administration has prosecuted leakers who in some sense were either whistleblowers or at least were not really attempting to assist the enemy, that really wasn't their motive. And the question is really, should espionage charges or charges under the Espionage Act and charges of aiding the enemy be available in cases where the information itself contained much that the public really had a right to know, and where the motive of the person who allegedly disclosed the information was fairly benign?
Well, the government maintains that the leaked documents posed a major risk to national security, but wasn't that the same argument that was used when Daniel Ellsberg released the Pentagon Papers, and the Supreme Court didn't buy it in that situation?
Well, it's always the argument that's made. The Daniel Ellsberg situation was different because the government was seeking a prior restraint on publication by a newspaper, and that's the absolute highest First Amendment protection that can possibly attach. The standard here is a little different, but certainly the argument is always going to be national security risk. But what's so notable about the documents that were leaked or that were allegedly leaked by Bradley Manning is, well, the lack of any evidence so far that national security has been compromised, and the fact that these documents on their face are full of information that really should never have been classified. And I have to hasten to add that there certainly is some information in there that could harm national security, and I'm not defending what Bradley Manning did. I actually think that it is appropriate to, if he did what is alleged, to hold him accountable and to prosecute him on some charges. I'm not sure aiding the enemy is the appropriate one.
But more likely embarrassing people in the diplomatic corps of this country and other countries. The government's own assessment of the leaks concluded that there was no real risk of major long-term damage to the United States.
And I think that's right. Mm-hmm.
In closing arguments this morning, his attorney said, "You're in a unique position to provide the United States Army with something it needs, a reality check." And then he continued, "The government has overcharged in this case in order to strong-arm a plea from my client."
I think that's right. I think it may not be necessarily in order to strong-arm a plea. It may be to try to get his cooperation to go after Julian Assange. It may be to send a very strong message to others within the government who think that it's acceptable to leak classified information if they have a good enough reason. But again, what's really notable is the unprecedented number of criminal prosecutions that this administration has brought against people who leaked information not to a foreign agent, not to another government. These were not spies. These are not the traditional Aldrich Ames kind of situation. These were people who had information that they felt was important to get to the public. In the history of this country, people like that have not been prosecuted with quite the ferocity that we're seeing right now.
But why do you think that is? When Barack Obama was running for president, he talked about a need for transparency and complained that the Bush administration was very secretive.
And I do think that in some respects this administration has been more transparent. But at the Brennan Center, we did an analysis a while ago of the administration's actions when it came to transparency. And the one thing that we noticed is that in situations where accountability was being sought for some kind of government misconduct or wrongdoing, in those situations, the administration was much less transparent. It got much lower marks. So just to give an instance, the administration has been opposed to any kind of independent commission to uncover some of the abuses that happened over recent years in counterterrorism policies. And this is that kind of situation. These are government employees who were trying to make sure that the government was held accountable for things that it did that were reflected in these documents. And I think it's not necessarily out of character for this administration to come down fairly hard on that, unfortunately.
Don't administration officials and every administration leak to journalists all the time? And
yes.
Sometimes it's classified or confidential information, often anonymously.
Yes, and that is one of the harms of overclassification, which, again, I really think is the theme that's underlying this entire trial, because so much of the information in the WikiLeaks documents was not properly classified. And one of the harms is that it enables the government to put a thumb on the scale of public debate by releasing the information it wants to and withholding the information that it doesn't want to. And one of the examples of that is the lead up to the Iraq war, where the government was sitting on some a lot of classified information about whether or not Saddam Hussein had a program of weapons of mass destruction. And the government made a decision to selectively declassify and release information that tended to show a program of WMD while not declassifying and releasing information that tended to undermine that conclusion. And obviously there was no national security rationale for one versus the other. It was just a way of influencing the debate.
My guest is Liza Goitein, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In 1971, Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart warned that, I'm quoting, when everything is classified, then nothing is classified, and the system becomes one to be disregarded by the cynical or the careless. Does that pretty much sum up where we are today?
Absolutely. And that gets to another harm of overclassification, which is that when people in Bradley Manning's situation day after day see coming across their desk documents that just make a joke out of the designation of classified, of course, they lose respect for the system. And once they lose respect, it's really a recipe for leaks. So it's a national security issue to have as much overclassification as we do. It's a national security issue for another reason. When so much information, low-level information, is classified, that means that, you know, almost everybody who works in the government in one way or the other, that's an exaggeration, but a lot of people need to have a clearance, even to do the kind of work that you wouldn't think would need a clearance. And so we end up with more than 4 million people right now in this country who have a security clearance. And when that happens, you can be sure that, you know, if one out of every 50 American adults has a clearance, not all of them are going to be handling classified information responsibly. It's just too big a barrel of apples not to have some bad apples in there. And I think we're seeing some of that. You know, Bradley Manning, if he did what was alleged, and, you know, based on the testimony about some of his emotional outbursts in the Army, was not a person who should have had or retained a clearance to look at classified information.
The prosecution presented a memory card of 400,000 documents of activities in Iraq, along with a text file allegedly written by Manning that said, "This is possibly one of the more significant documents of our time, removing the fog of war and revealing the true nature of 21st century asymmetrical warfare." So he was probably condemning himself in a way by writing something like that.
I think so. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so I hesitate to speculate, but some of his behavior does sound like someone who was trying to get caught. And he was clearly an emotionally very troubled young man.
And his defense attorneys have focused on his mental health rather than on whether what he did was a crime. Is that the kind of defense you would have built for him?
That's a hard question. I mean, I think it's being raised not so much as a defense, but in mitigation. And that's something that under the rules of the UCMG, he is allowed to present evidence in his defense or mitigation.
But his lawyers were barred from calling a number of witnesses to testify about his state of mind.
Well, it certainly did come out in the hearing. I mean, the 10 of the defense witnesses were also witnesses for the prosecution, and the defense was able to effectively cross-examine all of the witnesses to get this information out there. His state of mind is relevant, maybe not so much to excusing what he did, but in one sense it's relevant because his state of mind was evident to all of his superiors, and they had a responsibility in this story as well to take action when they saw how he was acting, and to make sure that he wasn't handling the kind of sensitive information that he was.
Did the prosecution bring up his personal life?
His personal life came out, I wasn't at the hearing, and I don't believe the prosecution brought it out so much as the defense brought it out.
That he's gay, for example, in a don't ask, don't tell environment?
Right. And that was something that I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe it was the defense that brought that out. And it was relevant in the sense that, this was, as I said, this was quite a tormented young man. And, I think ultimately, and it may be that it just goes to sentencing after all of this is over, but it's something to keep in mind. And it also, in my mind, goes to the appropriateness of the charges against him, as I said. I mean, this is not a typical, this is not a spy. This is not someone for whom I think the death penalty, a capital offense, is an appropriate charge.
Another issue is how the conditions of his detention. He was held for 10 months in solitary confinement, which is a very long time, I think, for a pretrial confinement. And during his detention, he was also subjected to periods of forced nudity, which the military maintains was done in accordance with Army regulations.
Right. Well, apparently, it was not just forced nudity. There were a number of very harsh measures imposed on him, supposedly for his own protection. But the psychiatrist at the brig recommended that these measures not be imposed, and the psychiatrist was overruled. So it's hard to credit that this was done for his own protection. He essentially, his glasses were taken away from him for most of the day, so he had to sit in semi-blindness. Every 5 minutes, he was required to answer a question, so he couldn't fall asleep. He didn't have sheets or pillows when he slept. He couldn't exercise in his own cell. He had an hour a day that he could basically just walk. It's treatment that was so shocking that the UN Rapporteur on Torture is investigating it. But what I want to add to this is, again, I don't personally think Bradley Manning is a hero. I don't think there's any way he could have read, let alone thoroughly analyzed, the 750,000 documents that he allegedly passed along. And that being the case, what he did was quite reckless because he had no way of knowing whether there was some very, very sensitive information in what he released. But unfortunately, the government's treatment of him in this case really has made him the victim in a situation where his own behavior was really the focus in the beginning. It's less the focus now because of the government's own actions. And again, the bigger picture behind all of this is the overclassification.
Well, does that undermine the government's case at all, the nature of his confinement?
I don't know what role that will have, honestly. I'm sure it will come up in the trial. I expect ultimately it will not undermine the government's case. It may go, again, to the sentence that's imposed.
The government called 21 witnesses, and Manning's lawyers only called two, then rested their case yesterday. The Atlantic called it sudden. Were you surprised by how quickly the defense wrapped up?
Not really. The defense had listed 48 witnesses that it wanted to call.
Including Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Right, and that was never going to happen, and so no surprise that they were not among the defense witnesses who were called. There were 10 overlapping witnesses, so in fact, the defense did have 10 witnesses before they had their two witnesses on the last day. And no, it wasn't surprising. This really wasn't a situation where the defense was going to be able to convince the investigating officer not to go forward with the charges, and therefore putting on all of the defense's witnesses in this defense's entire case could only serve to sort of advertise the defense strategy to the prosecution. So no, it did not surprise me that didn't happen.
Has the system for classifying documents been expanded since 9/11? It was always pretty big, wasn't it? There were jokes in the past about people just stamping top secret on pretty much anything.
And that still happens, and it's happened for decades, as you've pointed out, and it's always been an issue. Government officials across the political spectrum have acknowledged it. It's not even a controversial point. And indeed, estimates are anywhere from 50 to 90% of documents that are classified could safely be released, which is really quite amazing. The system itself did not change after 9/11, meaning that the rules didn't change, until recently when President Obama actually made some good improvements to the system. They were good first steps, I'll say. I don't think they're going to make the difference, but they may help a little bit. However, what did change was how much information was being classified, and it's very difficult to measure the increase because all of the increase in electronic documents being classified makes it kind of apples to oranges when you try to compare to recent years. But I can tell you that in 2010, there were 77 million decisions to classify information, which, I mean, that number just boggles the mind. Mm. And if you assume that the 50 to 90% overclassification rate is accurate, if you take the conservative 50%, that's tens of millions of decisions to classify information that properly belongs to the public.
In Salon, you wrote that, I'm quoting, if we are to demand accountability on the part of those who wrongly divulge secrets, we must also demand accountability on the part of those who wrongly create them.
That's right. That's right. And that's really the biggest problem with the system right now, is that there are so many incentives to classify information, aside from national security, which is supposed to be the only incentive. So if a government official has done something wrong and wants to cover it up, that's an incentive. If an official wants to do something quickly and easily, it's easier to cut other people out of the process, and that's an incentive to classify. Bureaucratic infighting and turf wars between agencies, there are so many incentives to classify. And then on the other side of the scale, there's nothing. And primarily, there's no accountability.
You don't have to explain why you have authorized something to be classified.
Exactly, exactly. There's no requirement that the person classifying the document even identify the national security harm that could result from the classification. No one in the regular course of business looks at what that classifier decided to do. And if by some chance an agency decided, hey, we're going to crack down on overclassifiers, first of all, that would never happen. They have no motive to do it. But second, they just have no way of identifying the people who are doing it because there's no system in place to watch these decisions and to monitor them.
And the only time we find out whether it should have been classified or not is when we get it from a Freedom of Information and Act filing?
Or from WikiLeaks. I mean, you know, that's when you see and you say, hey, wait, that's what's being classified? And it is. That is what's being classified. Some of the documents that WikiLeaks posted that are, you know, laughable in how trivial the information is, those are the kinds of documents that are routinely classified.
I understand that Julian Assange's lawyers were also observing the Manning trial because they want to know what they can expect.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure they're watching this very, very closely. The Department of Justice has an investigation, a grand jury, looking at whether Julian Assange can be charged and with what. It's a much trickier case for the United States than Bradley Manning. And certainly some of the speculation about the treatment of Bradley Manning in prison was that he was they were trying to pressure him essentially into cooperating in a case against Julian Assange.
Now, a writer for the Denver Examiner said this trial will be remembered like the Scopes trial. Do you think this is a landmark case?
I wouldn't say that it's like the Scopes trial because of the reason I said before. I mean, I do think that some degree of accountability, some criminal charges are appropriate in this situation. And again, I have to say this over and over, but, you know, assuming the allegations are true, he is still presumed innocent. So, no, I mean, I don't think it's crazy or unprecedented or wrong for the government to bring charges against Bradley Manning. I think, I still think overall it's not a proud day for the government. I think what Bradley Manning did, I mean, he was one young, confused kid. You know, what our government did is systemic. There's a systemic overclassification problem. There's a systemic issue with solitary confinement and the treatment of certain populations in prison. So I think the government has, it's sort of a pox on both their houses, I think, in my mind.
Liza Goitein is co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center. Thank you so much for talking with us today on our first Backstory segment.
Thanks very much. My pleasure.